no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We'll hear first this week from Radio City Playhouse, their story from August 8, 1949, titled Level Crossing. After that, it's Frontier Gentleman and the Cowboy, his story from May 25, 1958.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 50. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your director, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From our mail on last week's show, Tension in 643, here are two letters. A lady from Missouri writes, quote, I'm thoroughly sick of murder, insanity, and tragedy. Tension in 643 was a horrible show, unquote. The other letter from a lady in Chicago read in part, quote, Tension in 643 held my husband and me absolutely spellbound right to the very end. Keep up the good work, unquote. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this only goes to prove that nobody can please all of the people all of the time. However, to those of you who have written so many letters about Radio City Playhouse and the reprise series on 8 by request, our sincere thanks for your interest and friendliness. And now for tonight's show. David Gothard as Bradley Lane and Kathleen Cordell as Jane, his wife, in...
Wait a minute. Why don't you mention my name?
Level Crossing, Attraction 50.
All right. I can wait.
On Radio City Playhouse. Listen. It was the train that gave me the idea. I stood there at the deserted level crossing, and suddenly I knew how I could kill John Dunn. The crossing is dangerous. There's a sharp curve. Belts of fir trees to the right and the left screen the trains. Suddenly they burst out of nowhere and thunder across the 6-foot-wide dirt path. It isn't really a crossing at all. There are never any cars and very few people. It's just a path in the Connecticut woods that crosses a railway track 300 yards from our house. You could be on the south side, think you had plenty of time to walk across to the north side, and be fooled. The whole thing would look like an accident. Now I knew how to kill him. I just had to fill in the details. Why did I want to kill him? Well, that goes back a long time, more than a year. I think the idea of killing John Dunn occurred to me at breakfast a year ago. Jane and I were finishing our coffee, and suddenly Jane said something that made me realize she was suspicious.
More coffee, Brad?
No, thanks.
Brad, would you put down the paper for a moment?
Sorry, darling. Something on your mind?
Yes, I'd like to ask you a question.
Well, don't look so solemn, honey. What is it?
I don't quite know how to say it.
My, but we're being ominous this morning.
I've been going to ask you for a couple of weeks, but I haven't had the nerve.
Well, what on earth are you talking about?
Well, I... What became of the $2,500 commission you got for the DeBecker contract?
What do you mean?
I just wondered what became of the money. One of us must have spent it. I didn't.
Well, good heavens, Jane, you don't have to look so accusing about it.
Is that the way I look? I didn't mean to. It's just that when we were first married, we never had any secrets at all. You'd bring home your salary, and we'd put the actual cash in little budget envelopes. So much for rent, so much for clothes, so much for entertainment. Now I don't seem to have any idea of where it goes. Every so often they're fairly large sums, but, well, they just seem to disappear. Well, are you going to tell me? Or not?
Jane, I didn't want to mention it because I thought it might annoy you. To be perfectly frank, I'm afraid I've been a little foolish. I bought some mining stock, a mine in Canada. Jerry Walton suggested I take a bit of a flurry with him. Purely speculation, but quite possibly a good thing. A friend of his really stuck it rich up there, and we thought that we might as well get on the wagon, too, just in case. What's the matter?
Nothing. Go on.
Well, to make a long story short, it turned out to be a dud. The vein was only surface, and the property was so isolated that the shipping problem was more than we could lick, so we...
So we lost $2,500.
Yes, dear, I'm afraid we did.
On a mine that Jerry Walton recommended.
Well, he didn't exactly recommend it.
But it was his idea.
Yes. Yes, it was. Oh, look, honey, I'm going to be late for the office. I'd better run. That's all there is to it, darling. Just tough luck. Now, don't fret about it. So you lose $2,500. That's life.
Yes. Yes, I guess it is.
Mr. Jerry Walton, please. Hello, Jerry. This is Bradley Lane. I'm fine. How are you? Good. Look, Jerry, I have a favor to ask. I have done things for you in the past, and I'd appreciate it if you'd tell a little white lie for me. Well, to Jane, as a matter of fact, I'd like you to back me up in a slight, shall we say, fabrication. You see, I think she'll telephone you this morning and ask you if it's really true that we lost some money together in a mine in Canada. I'd like you to say yes, that we did. I told her I lost $2,500. Jerry didn't want to, but he backed me up. Jane did phone him that very day. Neither of us mentioned it again, but I knew she was ashamed of her suspicion. We forgot about the whole thing, and in a couple of days, we're back to our old relationship. Warm, loving, wonderful. I kept paying John Dunn small amounts for about a year. $100 here, $50 there. Nothing Jane would notice. Then one day he came into my office. This mean, crafty-minded little clerk with ink and nicotine on his fingers. He waited until everybody else had gone. Then he walked right into my private office without even knocking. What do you want, John?
I'm afraid we have to have another little chat.
We do.
Yes, we do. I have to have $1,000 by the end of the week.
I've told you not to speak to me in the office. You get privileges now that make other employees suspicious.
Mr. Lane, I think that's only fair.
You promised me you'd confine your demands to reasonable amounts. After all, I gave you my entire commission on the back of contract.
But this is an unexpected expense.
Well, avoid it.
But I can't avoid it.
Look, John, let's face the facts. I can only pay you so much, $500 or $600 a year I can afford. I can't ever pay you $1,000 in a lump sum. The tobacco money was different. I'm afraid the answer is no. Well,
then you'd better change your mind. I need $1,000 by next Friday night.
Did it ever occur to you that you're in this as much as I am?
It did, but I've a way out. If Mr. Harrison asks me, I've got a perfect answer. This is a very dangerous accusation, Mr. Harrison, but I'm afraid we fired the wrong man. Brader didn't steal that money. Mr. Lane did. It's taken me a long time to prove it. I always suspected Brader was innocent. I've been poring over the books for months. And this morning, I'll say, I found it. Now, don't try to pin me with any accessory or accomplice rap. I know what I'm doing, Mr. Lane. Believe me, I know what I'm doing.
I can't possibly pay you $1,000.
Bradley Lane, the treasurer of Harrison Winfield Incorporated, found guilty of embezzlement. Won't people be shocked?
But you can't get blood out of a stone. I've just bought a house. I've got a lot of expense. I bought another car.
There's nothing the matter with the car you've got.
I promised Jane a car of her own for her birthday.
Then you'd better break your promise.
But what'll I say to her? She's ordered it. I've paid her deposit.
Use the installment plan.
But she'd know. She'd find out.
A letter. Why don't you tell her that you let an innocent man be fired? Let an innocent man be blamed for money you stole from this girl.
Shut up!
Why don't you? If she knew where the money was going, if she knew you were paying it to keep out of jail. Now, look, Mr. Lane, I'll be out to your house next Thursday night at 9:30. You have $1,000 in small bills for me, or on Friday morning you'll wish you'd never been born.
The week dragged by. I couldn't work, I couldn't sleep. Then on the Wednesday, I got the idea at the level crossing. It suddenly all fitted together in my brain. As luck would have it, not that there is any such thing, Jane had an engagement on the Thursday. I'd be alone in the house with the maid. It was perfect. I just had to make sure of every detail. All day Thursday, I was shaking and nervous. Then when Jane left for her club meeting, I went into action. I rehearsed it step by step. This had to be perfect. Not a single loophole. I rehearsed it for the last time just before John Dunn arrived. If he's catching the 10 o'clock, he'll have to leave here at 9:50. It takes 10 minutes to walk to the station. So I'll set the clock ahead 10 minutes. Ahead 10 minutes. He'll really be leaving at 9:40. And that's it. When the clock says 10 to 10, it'll really be only 20 to 10. Now the hammer. Must be here somewhere. Here it is. Hammer in my overcoat pocket. That's it. Now, that's the clock, the hammer. Now the liquor. There's about 8 ounces of liquor, so say 3 tablets. 1, 2, 3. There. Now, shake it. There we are. The clock, the hammer in my overcoat, the liquor, glasses I've got. We'll go out the study door, walk down the path to the crossing. I'll kill him, put him across the tracks, get back here.
John, to see you, Mr. Lane.
Well, John, it's a shame to bring you way out here just to talk business for 10 minutes.
Well, I'm glad to come, Mr. Lane.
Is there anything you want, Mr. Lane?
No, nothing, Alice, thank you. Shut the door, will you?
Yes, Mr. Lane.
Well, now that you're here, we might as well be sociable. You want a drink?
All right.
This is the last of some very good scotch. What do you want, water or soda?
Soda.
Right. Here you are.
Aren't you having one?
I most certainly am. What's the matter? You afraid I'll poison you?
I think you'd like to.
No, I've decided to... Well, here's to you.
Cheers. You've decided to what?
I've decided not to pay you.
I don't think that's wise at all.
I look at it this way. I'll go in tomorrow morning and confess to Mr. Harrison that I stole money from the firm 5 years ago. I'll tell him that I'm selling this house, that I'll pay it back. I'm quite sure he won't prosecute me. That sort of scandal isn't very nice for investment houses. The worst he can do is fire me.
Ah, no more scotch like this. No more Connecticut home. No more country club. Doesn't it seem a shame?
I've made up my mind.
You're really serious?
Yes, I am.
You're not going to give me $1,000 tonight?
I'm not going to give you any more, ever.
Oh, then I might as well be going.
I suppose you had.
Isn't there a train back at 10 o'clock?
That's right. You've time for another drink. It's only 10 minutes from here to the station.
You're sure this is absolutely final?
Quite final.
Well, I may as well be going.
I'll walk to the station with you.
All right, if you want to.
Let's go out this door here.
Hmm? Yeah, all right. Oh, why, the overcoat is not that cold.
Well, sometimes there's a chill in the air up here. You ready? Go ahead.
Oh, thanks.
There's a step there from the patio to the ground.
Yeah, I have it. Look here, Mr. Lane. Supposing I made it 500, would that...
No, John, I'm finished. I've decided quite calmly to face it.
And this is where I come into the story. Who am I? That doesn't matter. John Dunn, Bradley Lane, are quite oblivious to me. They pay no attention to the chill beauty of the October night. Bradley Lane's hand is hard on the handle of the hammer in his overcoat pocket. He is looking at John Dunn's felt hat, estimating where and how hard he should hit. There will be very little blood, and it will take only a moment to lay the unconscious body of John Dunn across the tracks at the crossing.
I think you're making a great mistake, Mr. Lane. I'm perfectly willing to moderate my demands.
No, John. I'm finished. What's the matter?
I don't know. I feel a little dizzy.
Dizzy?
It's nothing. I'm all right. I shouldn't have had that drink on an empty stomach, I guess.
Well, I guess this is as good a place as any. Stop a minute, will you, John?
Why? What do you want? Mr. Lane. Mr. Lane!
Oh, you'd blackmail me, would you? You dirty, cheap little rat!
Let me go.
I'll find you on the crossing. Cut the ribbons.
Oh, please, in the name of heaven, Mr. Lane.
I'm going to kill you. I am. Oh, get away from me. Go home. Go home. Go anywhere, but get away from me.
You see, he couldn't do it. He lost his nerve. At the last moment, Bradley Lane lost his nerve. He turned around and ran for his house, just as fast as his legs would carry him. John Dunn stands there swaying. He knows he's been very, very lucky. The relief makes him a little unsteady on his feet. When he finally reaches the level crossing, he stubs his toe on the rail and falls. When he falls, he hits his head on the opposite rail. He lies there, alive, but unconscious. His hat falls from his head and rolls. Then a gust of wind catches it and blows it back across the track in the direction of Bradley Lane's house. It catches on a stump and stays still. In the meantime, Bradley Lane is almost home. He suddenly knows a great peace. He is not a murderer. He rings the bell of his front door, almost sobbing with relief.
Oh, I must have been crazy. I must have been crazy to even thought I could kill him. I must have been crazy. Hello, Alice. I forgot my keys.
Why, Mr. Lane, I didn't even hear you go out.
I walked Mr. Dunn to the station. I'm sorry to disturb you.
Well, that's all right, Mr. Lane. Mrs. Lane just came in. She's upstairs.
Thank you.
Anything else, Mr. Lane?
Nothing, thanks. I'm going to bed. By the way, the clock in my den is 10 minutes fast. Set it, will you?
Yes, Mr. Lane.
Must have been crazy. Crazy.
Darling, I just got in. Oh, Brad, what is it? You look so strange.
Oh, Jane, I've got to tell you something.
Well,
please don't say anything or interrupt me because...
Brad, you're crying.
No, oh, not now. About an hour ago, I was going to... Jane, I don't know where to start.
Darling, what is it? Now, sit down here on the bed. Now, what is it? You're shaking. Brad, what's happened to you? What's wrong?
I almost murdered John Dunn tonight.
You what?
Yes, I was going to kill him. And then... Then I didn't.
Darling, I've never seen you so upset. What are you trying to say? Brad, what is it?
Jane, when we were married, there were so many expenses I couldn't meet that I stole some money.
Brad!
From the firm, $4,000.
Brad, surely you're not serious. You don't mean it.
Of course I mean it. Do I look like I'm joking? I stole $4,000 of the firm's money, and I let old man Brader take the blame. They fired him.
Oh, no, this isn't happening.
John Dunn found out. He never believed Brader was guilty. And he kept poring over the books until he finally found the proof he needed. It took him a long time to get the evidence, but he got it. Ever since then, I've been paying him off.
Oh.
A week ago, he asked for $1,000, said he needed it. I made up my mind to kill him. I put some of my sleeping tablets into the whiskey.
Matt, darling, please don't.
Now, let me tell it. You might as well hear everything. I had it all planned. I doped the whiskey.
Oh, no.
It didn't affect me because I've had to take stuff to put me to sleep ever since this thing started. Then I took him out the side door. First, I moved the clock in the den 10 minutes. Then we started out to walk to the station. I was going to hit him on the head,
oh, no.
Lay his body across the railway tracks, and be home here by the time the train went past. Then I was going to call Alice and make some remark about how I hope Mr. Dunn took the right train, maybe ask her for coffee, and that would be my alibi. That I was home when the train hit him. That train was supposed to be running over him right now. But I lost my nerve, Jane. I had the hammer in my hand all ready to do it, and I couldn't. I couldn't do it.
Oh, my poor darling, what you suffered.
I ran home. I threw the hammer into the bushes and ran home. I'm going in tomorrow and tell Mr. Harrison the whole story. We'll pay back the money. I'm sure he won't prosecute me. I'll just resign.
Yes.
Oh, Jane, darling, I've been crazy. I've been dishonest and weak and crazy, but I did it because I love you.
More toast, Brad?
I can't eat.
Oh, Brad, it's all right. We've got our health. We've got each other. You made a mistake, that's all. Lots of people make mistakes.
I let Brader take the blame.
You can make it up to him. They'll hire him back. You can clear him. Brad, this is a new leaf. You know, I'm glad it happened.
Glad?
Well, I knew the money was going somewhere. I thought you were, well...
keeping some money.
Oh, I didn't know what to think. No, I don't suppose I ever really imagined you were doing anything like that, but since we've been well off, it's been different somehow. Oh, Brad, I'll help you. I will.
Mr. Lane. Oh, Mr. Lane, the most terrible thing. They just found Mr. Dunn.
What?
Alice!
The train ran over him last night at the level crossing. Cut him right clean in half.
Prosecution may proceed with the witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Southpaw, I understand you prescribed sleeping tablets for Mr. Lane.
That is right.
The autopsy on the deceased was difficult. The coroner, however, has established the fact medically that there were traces of the drug in the deceased's stomach. Why did the drug make the deceased groggy, as Mr. Lane suggests, yet seem to have no effect on Mr. Lane himself?
Because Mr. Lane's system had built up a tolerance for the drug.
He was used to it because he took it every night?
That is right.
How long have you been a maid to Mr. and Mrs. Lane?
3 years, sir.
Have you ever seen Mr. Lane tamper with the clocks before?
No, sir.
What exactly did he ask you to do to the clock in the den?
He told me it was fast and to set it back 10 minutes.
Oh. Do you recognize this hammer?
Yes, sir. Belonged to Mr. Lane.
Where did he keep it?
In the drawer of the desk in his den.
Thank you. Mr. Lane, what time did Mr. Dunn arrive at your home on the night in question?
About 9:30.
But you had set the clock ahead 10 minutes?
Yes.
So that it was really closer to 9:20?
Yes.
And what time did he leave?
10 to 10.
By the same reasoning, actually 20 to 10.
Yes.
And you left by the study door instead of the front door?
Yes.
Why?
Because I... You know why I was going to kill him.
Yes, Mr. Lane, I know. I thought the jury should hear it again. You walked along the road to the crossing and you took the hammer out of your pocket.
Yes.
And I am to understand that this sudden, I believe you called it change, came upon you at the exact moment you had the hammer raised to strike Mr. Dunn on the head?
Yes.
Then you threw the hammer away?
Yes.
After you'd had your change of heart?
Yes.
Since you had nothing to conceal, why did you throw the hammer away?
I've told you it made me sick.
It made you sick?
Yes.
The defense has made much of the fact that you made no attempt to sneak into the house. Instead, you rang the front doorbell. Why did you do that?
I had forgotten my keys.
I see. So that even if you wanted to, you couldn't have opened the study door.
No.
It was necessity then, rather than change of heart, that made you ring the front doorbell.
I didn't care then. I'd done nothing. I had nothing to conceal, so
yet you threw the hammer away.
I told
Mr.
you,
Mr. Lane, please, I realize that you have a very sensitive disposition. Now, please don't get upset. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this fantastic story of Bradley Lane's is ridiculous. He has admitted being a thief, being blackmailed, hating John Dunn, drugging his whiskey, planning his murder, going with him to the crossing, and we found the deceased hat on the south side of the crossing. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, there is only one possible verdict.
Something will happen. There's still time for the reprieve to come. Oh, darling, please don't cry.
Oh, Brad, but you didn't do it. You didn't do it. It's all circumstantial.
Please, darling, don't cry. I'll get the reprieve. I'm sure they won't. They won't do it.
They're coming. They're coming.
Please, darling.
But he's innocent, I tell you. You can't do it! You can't! Innocent people never get electrocuted for murders they didn't commit!
Innocent people do, sometimes. Bradley Lane did. You see, there is a rule in life which governs motives as well as acts. There is also a verse in the Bible which states, "As a man soweth, so shall he also reap." And, oh, who am I? Oh, yes, I am Luck.
Just heard Level Crossing, Attraction 50 on Radio City Playhouse, as written, directed, and produced by Harry W. Junkin. Bradley Lane was David Gothard. Jane was Kathleen Cordell. Other players included James Monks, Charles Penman, Connie Lemke, and Ralph Bell. The script was based on a short story by F. Wills Crofts, and the music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, Jan Miner and Arnold Moss in a profoundly moving story called Blackout. We hope you'll join us. Coming up on 8 by Request as Item 7, the exciting new Swedish actress Marta Torun in Soundless, one of the most successful shows ever presented on Radio City Playhouse. That's Item 7 this Thursday on 8 by Request. Good night, everybody. Fred Collins speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
There's a saying in the West that a cowboy is a man with guts and a horse. This is the story of one. His name was Slim.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
I bought a horse in Cheyenne and was riding to Laramie in Wyoming Territory. I wanted a chance to really look at this grazing country and the thousands of head of cattle dotting its plains. I rode north of the railroad tracks until the telegraph poles lining it were lost in a dusty haze. And I saw clouds, heavy and bronze, over the distant mountains. It was during the afternoon that I came upon the cowboy, a lean man of about 30, with a cigarette hanging from his lips. He was examining the right foreleg of his horse, and he looked up as I approached. Hello.
Howdy.
You need any help?
A fool horse stepped in a gopher hole. Don't seem to be no spring, though.
Fine-looking animal.
He ain't a bad old buzzard head. Hey, you English?
Yes.
You a ranchman?
No. A newspaper correspondent.
Oh. Thought maybe if you was a ranchman, you'd be looking for a hand.
I'm sorry.
You don't make no never mind. I'm chasseying over to Laramie. Figure I'll get me a job one of them new layouts I hear tells open up.
I'm bound for Laramie myself. You mind if I ride with you?
Well, I take it as real friendly. Quit it, you moon-eyed son of a gun. Hold still.
You think we'll have rain?
Don't feel like it. Of course, you can't tell with them clouds. I've been on the range, and there ain't been nothing but blue up there, and wango, down comes. Hail as big as your fist. I tell you, nature's a skittish beast. Ain't no-how bridle-wise.
Oh, incidentally, my name is Kendall.
Slim, how are you?
Slim?
Been in these parts long?
Oh, a few weeks. I came down from Montana Territory by way of Deadwood.
That's so. Did I hear Wild Bill Hickok got plugged a while back in Deadwood?
Yes. I was there when it happened.
That's so. What happened to the feller that done it?
McCall?
Yeah, that was his name, Jack McCall.
He was tried. The jury found him not guilty.
That's so.
Did you know him?
No, just here.
Oh.
What do you write about in your newspaper?
Well, I see people out here, their way of living.
Kind of different in England, huh?
Yes, it's quite different.
Ain't no plains, nor mountains, nor rivers. Ain't nothing back eastern England like we got here.
That's true.
Don't figure how come a man want to live back here.
Well, it's a different kind of country, a different kind of life. It's a...
Look.
What?
Didn't sound like no regular shooting. Oh, hold still, horse. I'll mash your sides in.
Seems to come from the hills.
Yeah. Reckon someone's in trouble. Let's go.
Range of hills, low-lying, somber, about a mile to our north. It was from that direction we heard shots. Slim's horse easily outdistanced mine, and by the time I reached the first slopes, the cowboy had disappeared into a canyon.
Kendall, over here.
What's the matter with him?
Looks like he's been locking horns with some Indians. I was just riding up to him when I fell down. There's half an arrow in him. Broke off. Now, take it easy, pard. Kendall, you better take his rifle. keep an eye out.
Yeah. No shells in it.
Arapaho's got it. Where?
Where? Where did they go?
Up a canyon trail. Wagon and horses. Claire.
Oh, that's too bad. Too bad. He ain't gonna have no breakfast again forever. That's for sure.
Well, what about the woman? Clara?
I guess she's still alive. Though maybe she'd rather not be. Indians keep captured white women around, sometimes for hostage, sometimes for other things.
Well, do you think we'd have a chance of catching up with them?
Might. Depends on how long a start they got and how many. I'd kind of like to bury him first. Ain't fitting for a man to lie out in the open after he's curled up.
Well, but it'll take time. What about the woman?
It won't go no better or worse with her for the time. Oh, that ground's too hard for hand digging. I'm going to have to make a rock grave. Tell you what, though. You start on it. I'll work up the canyon a bit, see if I can find signs. Now, if you hear three shots, come a-running. I'll do the same for you.
Right.
Oh, wait, he may have some shells left for the Winchester. Yeah. Well, that's something. Eight of them. You better keep the rifle here.
So long.
I began the task of burying the dead man. From letters and a homestead deed in his pockets, I found that his name was Theodore Belding. There was also a tintype of a young, rather pretty woman whom I gathered to be his wife, Clara. It took the better part of 45 minutes to complete the grave, and it wasn't until almost an hour later that Slim returned.
Well, I found the trail, followed it a way up. There was four Indians in the wagon. They cleared the wagon and left it burned. Took the horses, though, and the woman.
What are our chances?
Can you shoot?
I'm fair.
Well, I ain't done any trailing since 5 years back, but we ain't got nothing to lose. Be getting dark by and by. We'll keep going till light gives out.
Do you know this country, Slim?
Not much. But a man can read a lot of things from places he ain't been. Here. That's where they stopped the wagon, see?
Oh, you mean those double wheel ruts?
Yeah. Must have ambushed him from over there. And the feller fell here. See the blood spots? Guess he made things hot for him for a spell.
Were you an Indian scout, Slim?
Yeah, for a while. Worked with Custer.
Oh? What do you think of him?
For him, I got a can of cuss words, and I best keep the lid on it. Yeah, we'll save our breath for breathing from here on. I want to be able to hear what there is to hear.
We went on up the canyon, Slim reading the ground, or, as he put it, following sign. For a mile or more, the trail was obvious, even to the most unpracticed eye, but after we passed the burned-out wagon, it became more difficult to follow. For another hour, we rode in silence. The sun was beginning to set. A cool breeze was sweeping down the canyon.
Ooh.
Una.
You hear that? Could mean Indians made a camp. Those crows ain't flying. Figure they're sitting in the trees waiting for a handout.
Unless they're feeding on carrion.
It wouldn't be corn if they were.
Sounds as if they're in those trees. See, just over the rise.
Don't seem smart enough for Indians to make a camp this early.
Or they know we're following and they're waiting for us.
Shut your mouth, you glandered, spaven coyote. Hoss smells them. Now, we better tie the critters up.
All right.
Pull down that injured rubber neck of yours. Pale, pink, wall-eyed son of a gun, I'll skin you alive.
Hey, do you think... Slim, it might be an idea to work our way through the trees instead of along the canyon wall, huh?
Yeah, I sure do. That old sun's right behind us. We make awful pretty targets. Keep in the shadows as much as you can. We'll just figure they got no weapons, excepting bow and arrow. That gives us a mighty advantage. You all set?
Yes.
Come on, then. And watch out for twigs and dry leaves. Walk soft.
Ahead of us, through the trees and shrubs, lay the brow of the rise. We made our way upward until we were within 10 yards of the top. That's when I saw a glint in the sunlight and a trickle of sand moving down the slope toward us.
Get down!
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. Does that sound go with this music? Sure does, when it's the sound of the shutters coming off the summer place in the woods, in the mountains, or at the shore. Only 5 more days from now, all America opens up the summer place as we swing into the 3-day Memorial Day weekend, the first great outdoor holiday of the year. But first, what does your summer place need? In the refrigerator, on the kitchen shelves, the bathroom shelves, round the grill. Check now. Make a list now. Buy at your grocer's, your druggist, your hardware store. Then you'll be all set for that great big 3-day weekend. And say, don't forget to have your portable radio checked and ready. Wherever you spend your happy holiday, there's a CBS radio network station to keep you posted on the weather and the news. And now we return you to the Anthony Ellis production of Frontier Gentlemen.
Phew. You got good eyes, Kendall. I sure could feel a sawdust in my beard that time. Where are they?
Well, one of them's between the boulders, a little to the right of the clump of alders. There, you see rifle sight.
Want to try a shot with a Winchester?
No, not yet. Only 8 shells. We better save them.
How many rounds you got for your gun?
About 20.
I ain't got near the same. Say 50 rounds between guns and rifle. Not bad if it don't take too long. How many you figure we're shooting?
2, from the sound of it.
Sharps repeaters, that's for sure. Well, we sure cut a big gut that time.
Seems to me the only thing to do now is to wait until it's dark. There's no other way to get at them without being seen.
I'm wondering what our chances are after dark. We ain't in the best position. Might be we ought to pull back down canyon, wait for morning before we pick up the trail.
And what about the woman?
Well, if she's still alive, she knows there's help around.
White man! Come up from trees. We make medicine.
Here's the Indian couldn't drive nails in a snowbank.
He's trying to draw a fire. Locate us.
Well, let him.
You want to make medicine, Siwash? You come down here.
Man, that came from the left, higher up. One of them must be in a tree.
I think I can see him.
Yeah, there's enough sticking out. Gone. Gone now.
Not on this side.
Now there's one good Indian. We learned to shoot like that, mister.
Odd places.
I'm hit.
Where?
Oh, I'm hit in the arm. Oh, man, that hurts. Oh, that hurts.
Let me see now, Slim.
Ooh. Well, it ain't the gun hand anyhow. Can you bind it up?
Yes. I keep down now.
White man! You want white woman? We talk. Maybe you pay gold, get her back.
Come down here. We'll talk.
How does it feel now, Slim?
Like a branding iron's inside.
There's not too much bleeding, though. That's something.
Sure wish we had more cover. I feel naked as a painted cat laying out
white
here.
White man, we come down top. You shoot, woman die.
What do you think?
Yeah, we might have them buffaloed. Let them come. But watch them for tricks. They got 100.
Come down! We'll hold our fire.
Only one of them.
Now, if he ain't a setting duck against that sky... Well,
there's two more, though. They must be with the woman.
Yeah, maybe. Keep your eyes peeled.
White man has been wounded.
Huh. Indian has been killed?
We are many. You are two.
Climb down, Siwash. There were four of you, now there's three.
I have Little Knife, chief of the Arapaho.
Your Little Knife, a renegade dog who steals women.
Little Knife, not renegade. Fight with Crazy Horse. Little Knife, not steal woman. Take woman. Like white man take Little Knife land. Maybe kill white woman. Like white man kill Indian woman and child.
The war is over. There's no more killing on either side.
White man say war is finished. Not Indian.
Quit your coyoting around the rim, Indian. What about the woman?
You give me your guns, rifle, and gold. I give her to you.
I'll see you hung up to dry first.
Not our guns or rifles, but perhaps some gold. How much?
How much you got?
$100?
Not enough.
That's all there is.
All guns and $100?
No.
I go back. Maybe you hear woman die, then you pay.
Maybe you don't go back, Siwash. What about that?
Like all white men, break word of truce.
You speak of honor and murder with the same breath?
We can kill you all. We wait for night, then we kill.
I got a finger it's itching right now to wait for nothing.
Little Knife not afraid to die.
Little Knife, you took the belongings in the white man's wagon. Return the woman, and we let you keep it all. That and $100 in gold.
You'll let Little Knife keep what he already has. Not a trade.
Listen, you double-distilled son of a gun. I seen a fair-sized anthill down the canyon away. How'd you like to be staked out?
I make good offer. Woman for guns and $100. You say no, I go back now. Soon as the night... Then we take your guns and the gold.
The Indian turned and moved back up the slope. For a moment, I had an uncontrollable desire to shoot. Then I thought of the woman, of what would happen to her. I lowered the rifle. We shifted our positions a few yards to the right, and we lay there, waiting. And the darkness settled into the canyon.
Funny thing.
Huh? What?
We ain't heard no sound from the woman.
Yeah, I was thinking of that myself.
Wonder if she's all right. Well, should be better than three-quarter moon tonight. Coming up in a while. They gonna try something. It'll be afore the moon.
Slim, I think we better sit back to back in case they circle around us.
Yeah. I was just thinking. Wish I had me a drink of red eye right now. I know a place in Dodge. I tell you, Kendall, a shot of that tornado juice would draw a blood blister and a rawhide boot.
I'd like to see that.
Shucks, that ain't nothing. Feller what runs the saloon. He serves a free snake with every drink.
Shh.
That ain't what you think. It ain't no woman, that's an Indian. I know, I heard him before. They want us to think it's her.
Are you sure?
I'll show you.
Hey, you crow bait dogs, which one of you's a squaw?
See what I mean?
Yes. One thing I don't understand.
What's that?
Why do they stay here? Why not ride off with the woman?
Yeah, I figure there's two reasons. First, Little Knife's probably left the reservation. He ain't got no particular place to go. Second, they want our guns.
Indian will do a lot of fool things to get hold of a gun. Come to think of it, there's something else.
Oh?
Yeah. Maybe they're low on bullets. You reckon?
Yeah. It's quite possible. That's why they haven't attacked.
Sure. Sure, they're using sharps repeaters. That feller's Winchester ain't the same caliber. So whatever shells they picked up in the wagon ain't worth a thing.
In which case, we don't wait for them to attack us.
I know what you're getting at, but it won't work.
Well, why not?
That wouldn't be no good. Not with his twisted wings.
Slim, you stay here. Cover me with the rifle.
He'll hear you before you get 10 feet up the rise.
Slim, I'll admit that I'm a comparative greenhorn in your territory, but I've had the dubious pleasure of slitting a number of throats under similar circumstances in India. Those chaps didn't hear me. I'll take my chances with these Arapaho.
Well, you gonna use a knife?
Well, if I have to, yes.
You sure are a funny kind of Englishman.
Here, take your rifle.
Mister, I sure hope you know what you're doing.
So do I. I crawled out of the hollow and inched my way up the slope. I had seen the flash of the Indian's rifle and knew his approximate location. In the direction I was taking, I planned to reach the top of the hill some yards from where I had last seen him. It was slow, slow. Then, as I raised my head over the summit, I saw the great orange glow of the rising moon, and silhouetted against it, the crouching form of an Indian half turned from me behind a boulder. I drew out my knife. He died without a sound. Then I made out Little Knife and the remaining Indian. They were a few feet away, standing over a gagged and bound body. And in the constantly growing moonlight, I saw the chief bend down, the glitter of steel in his hand. This time I knew it would be a woman's scream I was going to hear.
Little Knife!
Kendall!
It's all right, Slim. She's alive.
She's all right. I cut the ropes, loosened the gag from the woman's mouth, and for a long moment she only looked at me. Then she began to cry. I carried her down the slope to where Slim was waiting. Then I went back to get the Indian horses and the things which had belonged to Belding and his wife. After that, Slim and I took her to Laramie in Wyoming Territory.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Jack Moyles as Slim and Lawrence Dobkin as Little Knife. Join us again next week for another report from The Frontier Gentleman. Dan Coverly speaking.
Today, hear Jack Benny on the CBS Radio Network.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. We've got more from the Radio City Playhouse, Frontier Gentlemen, past episodes of this show, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll also find our Shoutcast stream there and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with a story from Suspense and one from Matinee Theater on a brand new episode of the Relic Radio Show.